and Far North Queensland. It's now 22 minutes to 10 o'clock on this Monday morning, 3rd of July. And as I was saying to Martin Cudahy just a few moments ago, the ATM celebrated a birthday last week, but we were both a decade off when it came to the birthday it was celebrating. We kind of assumed the 40th, but in fact, the 50th. Yeah, that's right. 1967, the technology was invented. So, what future does it have now? It certainly has basically taken over a lot of the roles that banker tellers used to operate, but obviously with smartphones and other technology in the mix, perhaps they don't have a future. A person who could know is Morris Mislowski, our business futurist with one eye on the future and joining us from the future this morning. Very good morning to you, Morris.
Good morning to you, Keir.
Remarkable, 50 years, 1967, we kind of didn't expect that.
Yeah, isn't it incredible that it seems to be so old? Now, of course, this was in England. We didn't get it in Australia until 1977. And in fact, it was in Queensland that the first ATM was put in. It was at the Queensland Teachers Credit Union on St. Paul's Terrace. But it was a very, very different machine to the one that we have today. It was very much a dispensing machine, and it was built on, or the idea came from, somebody looking at a chocolate vending machine and wondering whether something like that could be used in a bank. Its very earliest incarnation in England, at the Barclays Bank in London 50 years ago last week, as you said, was for the elite. So you had to have credit standing that was beyond reproach, and you were given a series of tokens. Each token was valid for only £25. And you put the token into this machine and out would come the £25 and it would swallow up the token. And
right,
that's the
so
way
it didn't even identify you then, Morris?
The identification was simply through the fact that you had the token. Okay. It was only for the elite few.
That's remarkable. That's really, really interesting. But clearly people looking for still the convenience of not having to go into the bank and wait in line, was that still the essential need for the tech?
It was, but again, it was meant to be this marketing tool that those people that had money, that didn't have time, could have this extra bit of service that nobody else on the planet could. It really was that purpose initially. And then it began to grow into what we understand it today. It began to grow into the possibility that perhaps we could extend branches by not physically having them, but having a machine elsewhere, perhaps in a chemist or in a supermarket or somewhere. It began to be able to do more than just dispense cash, to take checks from us, to check balances, to pay for things. So slowly over the years it expanded, but it took about 20 years for it to become what we understand. In fact, it wasn't until the 80s, of course, with technology as we now have it, that it began to grow in what we currently use. And what I love is that its initial name in the media was Robot Cashiers.
Right. Oh, dear. Oh, that's fantastic. Robot Cashiers.
So we really haven't changed. I mean, today you and I talk about robots all the time and we seem to have gone mad. Everything seems to have become robots. But this, as you said, was in the 50s and we were already talking about a time when robots might take over banking.
Well, and they certainly have. I mean, there are now millions of them around the entire planet and many, I guess, banks, their actual physical branches having closed, perhaps as a result of that. So where do they sit now as far as a technology, particularly when we look to how we're turning towards so much cashless technology, Morris? And we're pretty good adopters of that technology here in Australia.
Well, wonderful. I remember in the 90s, the last century, when I talked about banking and ATMs becoming prevalent, because we still didn't have a great network in Australia in the late 90s, and that unquestionable thought that we were going online to do our banking. Nearly everybody in every audience, every corporation and on air said we will never bank in that way. We always want physical cash. And today, literally 92% of all retail transactions, banking retail transactions, happen in a digital space. We've come that far. In fact, in Australia, we are starting to diminish ATMs and they're slowly becoming like our payphones. They're more difficult to find. Now, that is an Australian and American response to it, but still around the world there are 3.5 million ATMs, don't ask me for all of their addresses, and about another 500,000 or so supposedly in the pipeline between now and 2020. And they are still really prevalent in Europe, in North America, in Japan and in India. So some places are still increasing their number, but Australia and America seems to be diminishing.
Yeah, so what does that mean for the future, not just of the ATMs, Morris, but also, I guess, of banks themselves and those physical places, which have changed a lot, right? I mean, when they remodel them these days, they do not look like an old traditional bank at all anymore. They're almost like foyers, lobby, waiting areas, essentially.
Well, they are, and they're pushing out the transactions. So all that transactionary stuff that you and I do, the putting in of money, the taking out of money, all of that's being pushed to machines. I do some work with some of the big banks, and firsthand I can tell you that they're grappling for the purpose of a retail space, and it is very much for interaction now, not for transaction. So it's mostly about going in, talking to a human, strangely enough, trying to get loans or having conversations about what you might be able to do with your finance products. They're looking to go beyond just retail banking into insurance. Some of them are in it, some of them are out of it, but they're looking for what's next. And they are certainly closing branches that aren't relevant anymore, because you and I don't physically go into a branch very often. In fact, when was the last time you went into a branch?
It was entirely just to do with trying to work out a problem with an account, essentially. You're right. But what does that mean then? I mean, when we look toward the future then, Morris, are we going to see the trend continue? Will cash evaporate, essentially? Will we just not need it at all?
Well, we won't need it as much. I believe in a less cash society. So certainly we're already doing more and more with less physical. Many of us are happy to tap and go. We're happy to buy online in various modes of it. We're happy for our mobile phone to make the transaction on behalf of us. So there's all this digital interface that's happening, and that's pretty much the way most of us will go. I think within 10, 15 years, we will have far less cash in our society. It'll be there for those people that are happy with it and want it, but it will increasingly be difficult. There are some retailers already that won't take cash. And what we're starting to do is for all of these transactions that you and I have to be involved with as humans, in other words, we have to take out the money from our wallet and pay, which is no great effort, of course, but it's something that we do. We have to physically tap something on our phone. That's going to diminish over the next decade as the transaction payment is taken care of in the background. So we will have authorized it initially. This is our account. We're happy for this to happen. But all of that backwards and forwards will happen within technology without us being aware of it overtly. And that's really where we're headed, where it's frictionless.
And it's not necessarily going to happen around the rest of the globe, though, as you say. I mean, there are a lot of economies still that, i.e., don't have the technology, can't afford the technology, or kind of operate on the basis that they don't have the technology. And I'm thinking about the kind of black market that exists in countries like India, which they've been trying to deal with in terms of getting rid of those particular denominations of notes,
yeah.
Morris.
And India's been really interesting because they may have, in fact, become one of the first less cash or cashless societies because, as you said, the government's very heavily pushing. India's also fascinating because they use what's called M-commerce, and that's mobile commerce. It is not unusual for an Indian worker to be paid their wages onto their mobile phone that they will then transfer back to their family. And you can see on payday, and I've seen it firsthand in India, and I know this is a gender-specific comment, but it tends to be the way it is in India, and the wives will be waiting in some village far away for it to be transferred to the mobile phone, and they will then go into their equivalent of a supermarket and buy with transactions on that. So we're starting to see banking even in those places on dumb phones. In India, they use WeChat as a social media, the same way you and I might use Facebook, and it's absolutely prevalent there. In WeChat, you can already go into a department store or into a restaurant, for instance, and in the restaurant, if you're sitting there, see the menu, order the food without talking to somebody, and pay for it all in that WeChat space. So the technologies exist, they're already out there, and we will see more and more of them over the next few years.
Help me to understand where the boundary is. I mean, we were discussing before some of the more outlandish uses of this technology. The idea that you could literally implant one of those RFID chips into yourself and essentially have that kind of ID and banking tech, all of the various tech that comes from the RFID, in your body. Do you think that that's something that could actually occur, Morris, eventually?
Well, yeah, we're almost a step away because many people, or some people, are already using Apple's or the Android Pay. And for both of those, you can use your fingerprint. Now, I know that's not exactly what you said, but that's the human bit of just touching it and then moving on. We're beginning to see what you're referring to, which is biohacking or Neuralinks, where the physical body, in fact, somehow emanates that payment. And I don't think that we're too far away for some people. I don't want to think about a society where we're forced to be chipped to have these things. But there are people already, and there was a story last week of somebody in Sydney
with his public transport.
Yeah, absolutely. Who implanted that chip in under the skin. So we're seeing that some people are doing that, and I think it may be an option for some. I'm not sure. You know, I love technology, but I'm not sure whether I would ever want to do it. So really, I think it'll become that interface of how do you want to do it, and here's a multitude of ways that you might.
And Morris, just finally, how is this all affecting our psychology when it comes to how we view our finances, how we care about our finances as well? The fact that it's made a less physical process, does that change how we perceive and interact with our finances?
It's actually the opposite for me. I think we lost our way in the 70s when credit cards came about. The first credit card was 74, and we began to be divorced from cash, because up until then we carried cash, which physically meant that if you didn't have the cash, you couldn't buy it. So for the last 30 or 40 years, I think we've become disconnected. What I'm finding now is through the apps, through the technology, because people are constantly looking at their bank balances, constantly seeing transactions across their screens, they're actually becoming more financially aware. And I'm hearing that anecdotally and in research from my insurance clients, from my banking clients and others, that people are now asking more concerted questions. They're thinking more about their finances because even though it's not physical, they're now seeing it so constantly. So I think that we are beginning, in fact, to reconnect with our finances and understand what it means to have a bank balance.
And it's also interesting, Morris, just to see how the barriers break down as well. I do recall, you know, times past where my parents would argue they would never, in a million years, ever use one of those machines, and of course utilise them all the time now. I remember a time when I said I wasn't going to do my banking on my smartphone, you know, a few years ago, but now I do all of my banking on my smartphone. So a lot of the time it's just that slow progression to change the psychology.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of the issues, quite rightly, were about security. I'm not quite sure it was technology, but it was security issues. That this thing just seems to go into the ether. Who am I sending my information to and how safe is it?
And I still have those concerns, but it's just like I've kind of given up worrying about them and just used the tech.
Because there's less evidence of that being true. Of course, there will always be cases that disprove that because we're humans and humans hack. But for the vast majority of us, we know that it's fairly secure, it's fairly routine, so we're happy to do it. And it's also the ease that you and I now can do our banking 24/7. I mean, I'm showing my age, but I literally remember the time when if you hadn't gone into the bank by Friday, 3 o'clock, there was no money for the weekend.
Morris, it's been fantastic to chat, as it always is. We appreciate you letting us make a withdrawal, mate.
Yeah, no drama at all.
Catch you in a fortnight. That's Morris Mislowski, our business future.